The orders of the court are pronounced and herein and are available for your inspection outside this courtroom and in the clerk's office. This morning, we have three causes set for oral submission. In the order in which they will be presented, they are Texas New Mexico Power Company versus Texas Industrial Energy Consumers and others from Travis County. Ronald D. Beck versus Lillian M. Beck from Grayson County. And Krim Truck and Tractor Company and others versus Navsa Star International Transportation Corporation from Rusk County. In each of these causes, we have allotted 20 minutes for the petitioners to make oral argument and 20 minutes for the respondents to make oral argument. If you're a counsel in the second and third causes, you do not have to remain in the courtroom, but please remain nearby so that we may proceed to your matter without delay. We will finish, of course, the presentation of these arguments before lunch, but we will take a brief recess in between the arguments in each cause. We are recording these arguments for the convenience of the court. You may listen to the tapes if you desire to do so by making application with our clerk's office. Justice Mosley is at a seminar this week, but he will participate in the deliberation and decision in these causes. Court is ready to hear arguments from petitioner in Texas New Mexico Power Company versus Texas Industrial Energy Consumers and others.
May it please the court, Ms. Phyllis Shum will present argument to petitioner. Ms. Shum is reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, this is Texas New Mexico Power Company's appeal of a judgment holding that its certificate to build an electric power plant never became final and is therefore inoperative. The issue of the finality of administrative orders has become a very active issue in the past 2 or 3 years, and it's an issue that can be of enormous practical economic consequence. I believe it has become very active in the past 2 or 3 years because parties opposing administrative orders have identified that issue as an offensive weapon by which they may undo the effectiveness of an order without proceeding to review on the merits. The Court of Appeals has held, in effect, that no conditional order can be relied upon as final at the time it is issued and motions for rehearing are overruled, based on that court's unfounded presumption that the agency always intends to relook at compliance with the conditions in the proceeding before it. In so holding, the lower court disregarded the language of the order itself. It disregarded the Public Utility Commission's position in the litigation in the lower court, and it disregarded the great majority of case law on the subject of conditional orders and the Administrative Procedures Act, which provides expressly that orders are final and appealable upon the overruling of motions for rehearing.
How do you respond to your opposing counsel's assertion that while this may be an interesting academic legal issue, in this case it's moot because in 1990 there was a new order which gave a certificate of convenience and necessity?
I have basically two responses to that, Your Honor. Certainly we disagree with that assertion, and I have two reasons for that disagreement. First, the issue before this court is whether the 1987 order was final. Nothing that the Commission did subsequent to 1987 in its effort to comply with the Court of Appeals judgment can have any bearing on the question of whether its order was final and whether it had jurisdiction to continue to proceed. Secondly, it's of great practical consequence to the utility involved, the banks who loaned some $600 million for the construction of the project, and the three construction companies who were on the project, because if the order was non-final in 1987 and ineffective, then it is entirely possible that construction of the plant, the project, was never lawfully authorized. And that can have all sorts of repercussions among these lenders and builders as to whether that money should have been lent, the project should have gone forward.
Yeah, but did the 1990 confirm the validity of the finality of the 87 order?
Yes, Your Honor, the 90 order did confirm that the 87 order was final. The
difficulty... these consequences you speak about are not really relevant here.
Well, Your Honor, the Court of Appeals held that it was non-final on its presumption that the agency would do something further. So the agency, in an effort to comply, found and issued an order in 1990 that the 87 order was now final. That means the gap between 87 and 90, all the activity took place without a final order in existence if the judgment of the Court of Appeals stands.
Well, how does this problem about the 87 to 90 gap affect the parties before us today? I understand maybe that creates some problem for a lender or a construction company out there, but it might be a fight between them.
Well, TNP, the petitioner before you today, is the utility which primarily relied on the 87 order and which is responsible for that plant and for the building of that plant, so they are very much affected. One other point I'd like to make on this issue is that the 90 order has settled nothing. Not only is there a question whether it is void because of the fact that it took place beyond the period of statutory authorization as we see it, but TIEC, which raises that issue before this court and suggests to this court that we don't need to consider this because the 90 order took care of it, is simultaneously in district court today alleging that the 90 order is non-final and non-reviewable. They would keep the ball in the air forever here, and we would then have to come up and litigate the finality of the 90 order. So we still have no better idea today than we did on the date of the Court of Appeals judgment.
It's not the same reason urged this time, is it?
Your Honor, their reasons have varied from time to time. I believe you're correct that they have a different reason at this particular stage.
Well, settling whether the 87 order was final is not going to keep anybody from arguing about the 90 order, I see.
Oh, Your Honor, I have to disagree with that. If the 87 order was final, then everything that the Commission has done in this docket is beyond its statutory authority. It's null and void. The 87 order was issued, and it was final, unless the Court of Appeals is correct. And if it was final, the Commission was not able to relitigate that issue. It did not have the case before it again.
Back to the consequences that flow if the 87 order was not final. How are those any different than if the 87 order was improperly issued by the Commission?
The Administrative Procedures Act provides that the enforceability of an order is not affected by the pendency of an appeal, so that if this order is ultimately reviewed on the merits and reversed, then during that interim period we will at least have had an enforceable certificate. We see this...
You still have a plan that was built without ultimate authorization.
That could happen.
Money loan, construction made.
That could happen were this order reversed on the merits. However, that is a contingency that we've been able to plan for. Your Honor,
why can't you plan for it with respect to the merits just as well as you can plan for it with respect to the finality of the order?
All right. With respect to the merits, we can plan for it very well because the Administrative Procedures Act requires parties attacking orders to put it in their motion for rehearing, to state their grounds in their motion for rehearing, and to place it in a petition within 30 days after the motion for rehearing is overruled. We were able to evaluate the motion for rehearing and the petition in light of the laws that existed at the time and in light of the substantial evidence supporting the order and make a reasonable business decision that this order is solid enough to warrant going forward. Finality was not raised in this case until some year and a half later. And another point I want to get to is that finality was only raised a year and a half later, I believe, because of two things. One was because of a new decision out of the Austin Court of Appeals, which we couldn't have planned for. We didn't know that was going to come out. And the other was that there had been a new political appointment Well, I may be stating that too strongly, Your Honors. At the time finality was first raised, one of the two commissioners who had voted in favor of our project had been replaced for a new political appointee to the commission.
Well, this is all well and good, but surely a party is not stopped by change of circumstances or latches any other doctrine from raising the non-finality of an order sometime during the appeal, is it?
That's correct, Your Honor. Finality is a fundamental jurisdictional point. That's why they were able to raise it a year and a half into the proceeding. And that's why we think it's so important that we have some consistency in the law so that people who have to make business decisions will know by looking at their order whether they may have a finality problem.
Well, perhaps we might center then on that issue. What kind of tests, what kind of guidelines should we look at in writing on this question of the finality of an administrative order?
Your Honor, I think that those guidelines are set out rather clearly in this Court's decision in 1983 in Big Three Against Railroad Commission set out in our brief and in all the cases that are cited in Big Three. The general rule is that orders are final when the motion for rehearing is overruled. As to conditional orders are final. That does not create a problem unless the agency has stated in its order that it intends to undertake further review and issue further orders. That's set out in Big Three. The conditions in our order that concern the Court of Appeals are exactly like the conditions in Browning Ferris versus Johnson and Walker Creek, which this Court discussed in Big Three, simple self-reporting conditions which do not create a finality problem. It would not make any sense for them to create a finality problem. The Court of Appeals presumed that the Commission would want to review the permits issued by other agencies. But my question is, where would that all end if, for example, there are many permits associated with a large project. There are construction permits, air control board permits, water commission for waste disposal. If the PUC is presumed to intend to review the air control board permit, for example, when does the air control board permit become final? And where does the PUC get authority to review an air control board permit? I think that as the courts recognized in Lipsy versus Health Department, which is cited in my brief, these projects are complex. The legislature knows and has provided that one agency is going to look at the air emissions, another agency is going to look at the economic regulation, another agency is going to look at another aspect, and that doesn't cause a finality problem. That has never caused a finality problem in any case until the incident one.
What if these conditions had never been met? What if either the utility could not or chose not to meet them?
Obviously, we could not operate the plant because we would not have the necessary permit to operate the plant. Now, the fact that it was phrased as a portion of the Public Utility Commission's order might mean that if we attempted to operate, we would not only be in violation of, say, for example, the Air Control Board statute, but that we might be also in violation of the Public Utility Commission's order here.
Well, my question is more whether timing is important. Suppose that an appeal had been taken from this 87 order, and throughout the pendency of the appeal in the district court, the conditions were never complied with. Does there come a point in the judicial review process when the order is just not final anymore?
No, Your Honor. I do not believe that an order loses finality.
So even though the utility could choose not to comply with the order, it could still, the judicial review of the order could proceed?
Your Honor, as admitted by TIEC in the brief they filed last Friday afternoon, all a certificate is from the Public Utility Commission is permission to build a plant. There are a lot of certificates out there that have never been fulfilled and carried forward with the building of a plant. That doesn't mean that the certificate is non-final or indefinitely open to review. It only means that permission was granted by the PUC and the company never went forward. That could be the case here had this utility chosen not to or been unable to obtain, for example, the Air Control Board permit.
Well, didn't they, in fact, choose not to proceed with the construction of two of the four facilities that were approved?
Yes, Your Honor. The units 3 and 4 are the subject of paragraph 4 in the order, which was the initial focus of TIEC's attack. That paragraph 4 provided that the issuance of this certificate shall not affect a prudency review of the scheduling of units 3 and 4, which were to be built in the mid-1990s on down in the future. It was and is our position that prudence review is a rate case issue and not a certification issue. However, because of the extreme importance to this company of knowing that its project in its first phase, units 1 and 2, was lawfully authorized, the company did in fact unilaterally abandon the certificate for units 3 and 4 in an effort to take that question out of the case so that they would know that there was no question about units 1 and 2.
Was a supersedious or stay of the district court's judgment or the Court of Appeals judgment sought?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
Beg your pardon?
Why not?
For several reasons. One, supersedious technically seemed inappropriate at the time. Also, we could lose. We were concerned that ultimately the PUC may have continuing jurisdiction over this case and did not want to preclude the commission from attempting to deal with the matter. We did not, also as a regulated entity, one doesn't lightly attempt to prevent the Public Utility Commission from undertaking something that it's attempting to undertake. It's our position that anything they undertook after there was a final order was void.
Any other questions at this time? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Jonathan Day will present argument for respondents.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Jonathan Day. I represent the Texas Industrial Energy Consumers. At the outset, I'd like to make a few comments that might provide some context for the court, matters that were not elaborated in the briefs to this court. First, let me tell you who TIEC is, which I represent before the court this morning. It is an informal association, and in this case, it consists of Union Carbide, Amoco Chemical, and Marathon Oil Company. Those three companies are high load factor, high voltage customers of PNP in the Texas City area. They are consumers of electric power provided by Texas New Mexico Power Company.
Are you saying we have a David and Goliath here? We have your Goliath against David, the small utility company?
No, Your Honor, I'm not suggesting that at all. I'm really hoping to convey that we are here as consumers. We are interested in our rates, as are all other ratepayers of TNP, and the certification process that was established by statute by the legislature is designed to protect the consumers from investments which have been improperly undertaken. There are certain criteria that have to be met. And our participation in this case from the very beginning, and it has been a long and arduous one, has been on the basis that it was our view that this plant was not a prudent investment and should not have been certified by the PUC. It did not meet the statutory criteria.
And as you mentioned, the objective is consumer protection. How are consumers possibly harmed by finding this kind of order to go get certificates elsewhere and then proceed to be fined?
The consumers are harmed because of the unique character of this project. I think we need to consider what the commission had under consideration. This was a unique project. It was a turnkey, off-balance sheet, relatively new technology. a new project that had a lot of uncertainties associated with it, fluidized bed technology. TNT presented this as a fixed price, a new way to approach construction of utility plants. The certification was considered under amendments to the statute undertaken in 1983. The commission, presented with a unique proposal, was very concerned, for example, that certain permits would not be obtained and the company and the consumers might be stuck with a plant that could not operate or would not operate. And I think that from the viewpoint of the consumer, the commission was acting to protect the consumer by imposing paragraph 2 and the paragraph 4 condition in an effort with regard to 4 to prevent the actual construction of the third and fourth units, to take a second look at it and not allow the utility simply to proceed with that construction. And with regard to paragraph 2, to require that certain permits be obtained and produced so that the consumers would be protected. That, I think, is where the nexus is between the conditions and consumer interest, I think, were represented by the commission.
Well, specifically, how would consumers, not just in this case, but in any case, be adversely affected by finding final an order that appears there in paragraph 2 to basically say, you've got our approval, but of course we can't give you the approval for the Air Control Board or the Water Board or some federal agency. You've got to go get your permit stamped by them too, but you have our stamp of approval.
I think, again, Your Honor, that the unique character of the project needs to be considered. New technology, whether or not permits could be obtained was an uncertainty. And I think the commission, and under advice from its general counsel, if the court will review the transcript of the proceeding, which I believe is attached to our appendix, the general counsel said, look, we have the authority under Section 57. We believe that you can require this utility to come forward with, quote, all necessary permits so that when the consortium, the construction group, and the financial group complete this project, that the commission is assured, as occurred in the Mahon case, Your Honor, the commission is assured that this project meets the criteria and is in fact going to be useful to consumers and that it will produce power without impediments, regulatory impediments from other agencies. I think that's exactly what you can argue whether or not that was a reasonable requirement. But I don't think there's any question, as the court looks at the order that was entered, that that was what was on the commission's mind. They wanted to be assured that this project was going to operate on behalf of all consumers as well as the utility.
That sounds like this helped consumers. And the question is, why does making this order final hurt consumers?
Well, Your Honor, there are, in addition to that, because consumers and intervenors before the Utility Commission have not had the opportunity, nor has the Commission had the opportunity to examine whether or not this company has complied with these conditions.
But the commission did never reserve that requirement, never reserved that right, did it?
Well,
paragraph 2 simply says all they have to do is deliver these to the commission and that's it.
Well, I think that's the very problem. And I certainly want to bring to the court's attention that the language here is one of conditionality. It does not say, paragraph 2, for example. We place considerable reliance on paragraph 4, I might add, which was not addressed by the Court of Appeals, but addressing paragraph 2 for a moment. Paragraph 2 uses the word condition, as does paragraph 1. It doesn't say subject to your simply filing these permits. It says you have to filed a notice with the Commission's General Counsel of its compliance with the conditions. Now, query.
Counsel, how is this different from the Big Three case?
Well,
imposed a condition.
In Big Three, what was at issue was simply a subsequent order of the administrative body, as I recall. Here we have factual matters.
On another docket number.
That's right.
It was conditioned upon final order and the other docket number. Once that was done, then they could go forward. It was simply a condition. They had nothing further to do but await that.
But here,
the UC says, hey, you don't have to come back to us once that other order is issued. You can go forward. How is this different where they say, hey, you don't have to do anything more with us. We're through. Just get these things from these other agencies, report back to us on them, and go forward. In addition, isn't this facility that's being argued about now, isn't it already operational?
One of the units is operational and is in service. The other unit, I think, is about to be
in
service.
And they dropped the other two that you wanted to postpone until you had a trial run with these.
Well, the utility has announced its abandonment, which the agency has treated as an amendment of its application in the 1990 proceedings. But let me address briefly the conditions in paragraph 2. What was at issue in Big 3 was a final order about which I would submit there could be little doubt, an order to be entered. Here we have questions about what permits are necessary, whether the design changes in fact allow the use of Western coal. We have factual matters that have to be resolved. These issues cannot be resolved by a simple filing by TNP and an assertion that these are all the necessary permits. Who is to determine what are the necessary permits?
Council, and if there are alternative remedies available in the event that the required permits were not obtained, is there any other alternative available to your client?
Well, under the certification statutes, no. I mean, TNP has now filed a letter in 1988 and said, didn't represent to the commission that these were the necessary permits or the operating permits. They said, this is what we have. And I would urge the court to look at that letter. With regard to your question,
have
no alternative remedy with regard to the disposition of the application for certification.
Is there a contention that they did not meet those conditions?
In the 1990 order, or the 1990 proceedings, and this is cited in our recent brief, which I thought was important to bring to the court's attention, this matter has now been considered. Yes, the examiner has now addressed whether those conditions have been met, and specifically ruled that the filing by the company in 1988, their unilateral assertion that they met the conditions was inadequate. So what we have now before the district
inadequate
court...
Inadequate because they had not met the conditions or inadequate because they didn't document the reporting?
Inadequate, well, the commission has now changed the character of the conditions to be required and ruled that they've been substantially complied with. That's a brief summary. That's one of the reasons why we submit that what is at issue before the district court as a result of our 1990 appeal is the factual questions as to whether or not the conditions have been met, which is an entirely different issue as to whether or not this original order was conditional. And we submit that in all events, the case goes back to the district court and the proper analysis at that point has to include the commission's own consideration of whether the conditions have been met, which conditions are appropriate, and so forth.
If the commission had wanted the 87 order to be final, what should it have done?
What it should have done, and it would have been simple to do, it should have struck every reference to condition in the order.
How does that help TIEC?
Well, we're entitled to a final adjudication, and we're entitled to a a due process review of whether certain matters that had been left unresolved had in fact been resolved by the commission. With regard to Section 4, and this is crystal clear, Section 4, as we quote in our brief, Chairman Thomas says, there will be a review on whether or not to proceed with Units 3 and 4. We will hold a hearing.
How are those an issue anymore?
Well, it's an important consideration because...
Was that included in the PUC's order?
What?
What's review, that language.
It says...
The written order is what controls, isn't it?
Absolutely. But I do think the language of the commissioners when they considered this order is important, and it is cited in our most recent brief. It says that the granting of the certificate does not preclude the review of the prudency of the scheduled dates for the start of construction of Units 3 or 4. Upon the motion of either the commission or an affected person alleging that conditions regarding the following have changed, the commission shall review the construction schedules and so forth. It is elementary that a certificate of convenience and necessity for a utility gives it the unbridled right to start construction on a unit.
What effect did it have when they abandoned 3 and 4?
The commission, as I've earlier related, in 1990, mind you, that statement of status where they say we abandoned it, which occurred in the spring of 1990, occurred long after the Court of Appeals had issued its opinion, and certainly many years after the district court had issued its ruling in this matter. The commission has said that's an amendment. You asked for a certificate for 4 units. Now what you've done is you have said we don't want 4 units, we want 2 units. And we're going to consider this to be a 2-unit application, and we grant the certificate for 2 units.
Does that move the question?
It doesn't in the sense that if this case were remanded to the district court, if this court were to say, yes, we're going to look through this language and we're going to say that the references to condition and so forth are, we're going to disregard all that. We're going to disregard the fact that the commission was going to hold a hearing subsequently on 2 of the units. What we have back in the district court is a 4-unit application with a new proceeding coming up from the commission saying we have a 2-unit application. And we submit that the right way to handle this case, I know the court would like to address, or I assume, or you wouldn't have granted the writ, would like to address the question of finality. This is not the right case to do that.
Why not?
If you're
not
challenging the finality of the 1990 order, you've been characterized as constantly keeping the ball in the air as to finality.
Your Honor.
So if this is not the case, you're going to be back, we're going to be back here because you're challenging the 1990 order as to finality.
We have a different...
So you have to answer it here or in the 1990 order?
We have an entirely different order in 1990. We have a 2-unit order. We have determinations by fact findings by an administrative law judge confirmed by the commission about what conditions have been met, what conditions are no longer relevant, what conditions should be disregarded. We have an entirely different disposition of this case. What we're challenging there is whether or not the conditions have been met, not whether or not the order is final in the sense of whether or not it leaves matters that have been ultimately undisposed of. And that's the issue which should be addressed in the judiciary. What we now have...
You're not challenging the finality of the 90 order.
We're challenging whether or not those conditions have, with the conditions which they have upheld now, whether or not they have been met.
In your 87th lawsuit in district court, did you have an alternative claim on substantial evidence as to the commission's findings, or did you go entirely on the jurisdictional question?
No. Let me explain. The answer is we had substantial evidence appeals. But let me address one thing Ms. Shunk made a particular point of, and that is whether or not they've been surprised or somehow or another taken advantage of in this situation. Let me bring to the court's attention the lengthy colloquy before the commission at the time they entered the 87 order, and I asserted personally that in my view it was not a final order. as did other counsel who were present. Mr. Shirley, who is here on behalf of TNP, specifically stated to the commission words to the effect, do I understand that at least as to units 1 and 2, that is not conditioned? He also said, well, we always expected to get a conditional order on 3 and 4.
Well, let me ask you about that. If they had said clearly in the 1987 order, units 1 and 2 are approved, and then they had paragraph 4, would it have been a final order as to units 1 and 2?
I think that clearly the commission had the ability to craft a final order. And I was earlier trying to address the question by removing the words condition, the conditionality, by saying, just submit these following permits. We're not going to review them. You can write an order. Any administrative agency can write a final order if they are about the business of doing that. Keep in mind that they are not obligated to grant this certificate. It's not a rate case. It's not a rate case that they have to rule on and decide rates. They have to address a rate case and prudency issues. Ms. Shock says,
I appreciate all that.
Yeah.
My question is, if you had paragraph 4 verbatim like it is now, but the first three paragraphs had consisted of, we approve units 1 and 2, would it have been a final order under the cases that you're relying on as to units 1 and 2?
It would have been. I cannot craft the precise language, but if they had simply said, grant a certificate for 1 and 2, come in here and self-report the following specified permit, sure, it would be a final order. They didn't do that. I mean, despite the fact that counsel from all sides was telling him it was not conditioned. Furthermore, there was a motion for rehearing filed by one of the parties saying this order is not final. It came as no surprise to counsel for TNP that they had finality problems with this order. Their own counsel addressed those issues.
Counsel talked about 3 and 4, though, didn't he? He didn't. Their counsel did not address 1 and 2 as finality.
Yes, he did, Your Honor. There is, and I can't, in the time allotted to me, give precise quotations, but he did complain and said, look, I can't get all these permits. Some of these permits are not going to be available until the unit is operational. And he protested about it, filed a motion for rehearing on that point. He clearly addressed the problems presented by the requirement to come back and produce certain permits.
Well, isn't that a direct question of finality?
I certainly interpreted it
as that. That was your interpretation at the time.
Yes, sir.
Isn't it correct that some of these permits wouldn't be available until the plant becomes operational?
That's absolutely correct.
Then, you know, aren't you asking the utility and the people that invest in the utility to build, and then after they build the plant, find out whether or not that it's okay to build it?
Your Honor, that's exactly what's being done. Is that an intelligent condition? I can't rule on that. I will tell you that this commission, and that's why I made a point early on of saying this was a unique project. They were afraid that certain permits could not be obtained. And they arguably went overboard and imposed conditions that were not reasonable. But that's not grounds for this court to say we're going to strike those conditions, that somehow or another they didn't exist because they were not reasonable. But counsel for TNP specifically complained about certain conditions, which he said, we can't meet until it's operational.
Let me be sure I understand. The question was, aren't you asking the utility to build the project and then find out whether it's proper? Is that what you're arguing or not?
I am arguing, Your Honor, that's what the commission did. That's what the commission clearly intended by paragraph 2. And by paragraph 4...
Aren't we charged with, you know, construing these things in some rational manner, though, and not requiring people to do the impossible?
Well, Your Honor, keep in mind the nature of this project, and keep in mind the context in which this project occurred. New technology, off-balance sheet financing, fixed price, guaranteed turnkey project, all of those elements with uncertainties about environmental permits, uncertainties about whether or not this project would ever benefit the ratepayers of TNP. in the context where the general counsel said to the commission at the time, look at section 57 of the PURA. Look at that. And you will see that this is within your power. So is there any doubt that the commission intended these as conditions? I submit not.
Counsel, was the if the commission granted an order in this case, in paragraph 2, were they obligated then to put this, the amount that the utility spent on this project, into the rate base to allow the utility to recover for it, or is that a new issue when it comes time to setting rates?
Prudency is a subsequent issue.
And this has no res judicata effect on it?
Absolutely not.
So if it turned out the project didn't work, the utility could be stuck for all the costs. Is that right?
It could be, but that's upon a showing, which would be a factual determination, that the commission, that the company had been, in fact, imprudent in some respect. And in this regard, I think the commission had some misgivings that because the project was undertaken by a consortium, that there might not be any imprudency on the part of the company, and yet the project may not operate as it was advertised. And so I don't think that the court should say, well, there is a prudency review, and that solves all these problems, because that's directly dependent on a subsequent factual determination that would have to relate to some negligence or some imprudence on the part of the company.
Under your argument, though, that would render the order not final if there was any subsequent review by the PUC.
No, I didn't mean to imply that.
Well, let me ask you, are you saying that once, assuming there's a non-conditional order entered by the PUC, that the PUC no longer has any authority to deal with the subject matter of that order, even though the plants may take some time thereafter to be completed?
I'm not sure I understand the thrust of your question, Your Honor. The commission has the authority to review on prudency and only on prudency.
Why doesn't that make it a non-final order?
It does not make it a, I mean, I...
Under your scenario?
No, it does not make it a non, does not make it a conditional or non-final order. The prudency review arises out of an entirely different section of PURA and is determined by an examination of the prudency of the investment.
I thought your argument was that if the PUC has anything to do once it renders an order, if there's any conditions, anything further that they're supposed to do with regard to that order, it renders it non-appealable. I'm sorry, renders it non-final. That's not your argument?
It is my argument, but the prudency review is a separate factual inquiry based on a different record at a subsequent time, generally after the facility has been completed. And in fact, TNP's current rate case before the commission involves a prudency review of whether this investment was undertaken in a prudent, whether the plant was prudently undertaken.
Counsel, looking back at the time and the considerations under which this project were built, being very unique considerations, were the requirements of the PUC unreasonable?
I submit not. I wish they had been more clearly stated, and I asked the commission at that time to be more definitive.
It wouldn't be unreasonable to say, you know, go build it and then come back and see if we'll give you a permit for it?
Under Section 57, and pursuant to the advice of their own general counsel, and I come back, Judge Gamage, to the proposition that under Section 2, the commission had legitimate concerns, and they were attempting to impose those concerns and those requirements. They didn't say that you get your CCN subject to simply filing with us these items. They said it's conditional, come back, show us your change order. And in fact, that's what the examiner has subsequently ruled in 1990. The examiner in 1990 did not say we intended these to be self-reporting requirements, and in 1988 TNP fulfilled them.
We're not really dealing here with what the commission did in 1990,
are we? The reason I wanted to bring to the court's attention the 1990 proceedings, the Attorney General and the commission have abandoned the field. Ms. Schunk made a point of saying they tried to defend this thing before the district court. That's true. When they lost, they said, we quit. We're going back to the commission. And the commission has devoted an enormous amount of time and effort to reopen the record, reconsider whether the conditions have been met, decide which conditions are appropriate and which are not, and has ruled on all those matters. I submit that in that context, the proper review process is to let the district court consider the whole record, including the 1990 factual development, and consider the commission's own interpretation of its order, and to consider, and they have retreated on some of these conditions. I mean, but never did they say, we didn't intend for those to be conditions. Never have they said that.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
I suppose your position is that if the order is final, the 90 order and record should not be considered by the district court.
That is correct, Your Honor. If the judgment of the Court of Appeals is reversed, as we say it should be, this case should be remanded to the district court for review on the merits, substantial evidence review. Your Honors, I'd like to put this a little bit into context, even though my time is short. We haven't had merits review. The Public Utility Commission stands ready to defend on the merits. They filed a general denial and a brief pointing to the substantial evidence supporting their order. Texas New Mexico Power Company stands ready to defend on the merits. Now, this is not the first time that this court has been confronted with a proposed technicality to derail administrative review, judicial review of administrative orders. There's a lot of money in these cases, and there are a lot of very good creative lawyers. And the court may recall that about 4 years ago, the fashionable issue was standing, and everyone was attacking each other's standing to try and avoid review on the merits. And then more recently, the issue has been findings of fact, that the agency's findings of fact were formally inadequate, and so we couldn't look at the evidence supporting the order. This court has always rejected such a hyper-technical standard of review that prevents litigation on the merits and has told the parties to get on with the merits. That's what we're seeking here. Now, Justice Cook, you asked what should the commission have done had it intended this order to be final? Well, I would argue that it should have done what it did, which is include that hallmark, that language that this court has stated is the hallmark of a final decision, which it did, and it's paragraph 7, all relief not granted is denied. That's their indication. TIEC's response to the question was they shouldn't have included any conditions. But, Your Honors, the cases cited in our brief, Walker Creek, Browning Ferris against Johnson, Big Three, all the cases, until the instant one, have held that conditioning is permissible, so long as it doesn't require further discretionary decision-making by the agency. So there was no reason that the commission should have forecast the future decision of the Court of Appeals and envisioned that conditioning was no longer permissible and was going to undo this. Justice Cornyn asked, does the ratepayer have remedies if this plant doesn't work? Well, of course. The ratepayer's primary concern is not to pay for something that doesn't work and should not have been built. There will be a rate case, and there will be prudence review. There will be review as to whether that plant is working and whether the ratepayer is getting value for its money and whether the company wisely went forward at the time that it did. Justice Phillips, you asked, why should this court rule? And I think that the answer I just gave leads to that question. Was the plant built wisely? In 1987, the commission conclusively told this utility that there was a need for the project, that this was the best technology available to satisfy that need, that no alternatives were available, that the schedule was appropriate and reasonable. The schedule contemplated completion of Unit 1 in 1990. Should the utility have gone forward with that kind of direction from the commission and the kind of order it had? We submit that it should have. But if some years later it's to be told that it never had a certificate, how is it going to get lenders to invest? How's it?
If I may, I believe I heard you say a while ago, and basically I think it's the gist of the Three Rivers, the Big Three case. Conditioning is permissible in final order by an agency so long as it does not require further discretionary action on the part of that agency.
Yes, sir.
That's a fundamental principle you're arguing for. You're arguing that if there were ever any discretionary elements remaining in the order, that they were removed when 2 and 3 were abandoned. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right of review retention.
Yes, Your Honor, although I would also remind the court that paragraph 4 reserved only review of the prudency, and that as we've all discussed and as counsel just acknowledged, prudency is a rate case issue.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the first cause. The court will take a brief recess.
The audience